Professor, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Well, welcome to the Church Planner Podcast. I'm your co-host, Chesley. You are probably glad that Peyton is back because I've been holding down the fort, but you'll probably get him next episode. But today, I've got a really special guest, Joshua Branham, who wrote the book, What Are You Waiting For? He's a pastor in Idaho. I'm guessing Boise. Is that right, Josh?
Boise, Idaho. That's right.
Boise, Idaho. He came from Alaska to Boise. So he wanted less sun in his life and a little bit more of a predictable pattern, I'm guessing. Less sun in the summer, at least.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So you planted a church when you were 27 years old.
That's right.
And then you decided after a few years, I should probably write a book about my experience. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I never loved writing. I never aspired to be a writer, but I had gone through a process, you know, started planting the church in the works, 26, planted it when I was 27. And a month after we planted, I kind of had this vacation, kind of like all the pre-launch phase was over and the white water and all the craziness. And I went to actually Australia. That's where my mom is from. My parents live in Australia. So I was on vacation and it was rainy the entire time. So instead of being out, you know, at the beach, instead of, you know, being out on the trails, I was just inside. And so I was journaling one day just about my experience, about being a young leader, kind of the obstacles, the resistance I experienced that before planting. And pretty soon I had what I felt like was a book. And by the end of that vacation, felt like I need to not just have this be a few journal entries. I need to continue to write this story out, explore this. And that is what eventually, would become the book, What Are You Waiting For? Which tells a little bit of my story, but also really focuses on how God has used young leaders all along. If you look at scripture, it's very easy to find teenagers and young adults that are woven into God's plan of redemption. And so I kind of pick up on some of those key characters, look at why does God use young, inexperienced leaders in his plans? Why not just go with the pros? Why not just go with, you know, the experienced people? And so, yeah, I'm a big believer in the next generation. And that's a little bit of my story of the church that we planted. Yeah.
So what caused you to journal all of that in the first place?
Yeah, I think for me, it was just a season of processing. You know, post launch of the church, there's that kind of like hectic season, and then you're off into the races and you're rolling and you're doing, you know, Sunday services, you're doing all that sort of stuff. And for me, I felt like, man, maybe traumatic is too strong of a word, but I was like, I feel like I just went through like a crazy, I'm a runner, so like a marathon. Like I went through a crazy kind of marathon, and I wanted to like just process what it was like and pray through those things and note those things. And yeah, pretty soon kind of realized that there's probably a lot of similarities between what I experienced as a young leader and what other young emerging leaders face. That kind of insecurity that they themselves have. Am I ready for this? Do I have what it takes? As well as some external opposition of other people kind of putting barriers in place, or other people maybe being the source of those questions. Are you sure you can do this, right? Are you sure you know how to balance a budget? Are you sure, you know, and all of that goes into the mix. And yet I had an undeniable calling from God to do this. And so I had to like keep coming back to that time and time again. Am I going to be faithful to what I believe God's calling me to? Or am I going to let my own insecurities or this external opposition win the day?
Yeah. So you ended up planting the church. It grew quite a bit, but every story, especially of a young leader, there's adversity in there. There's the people questioning you. Did you find yourself falling into that role even with younger people, or were you pretty good at being able to look at your past and go, no, I'm not going to do that with anyone else?
Yeah, where I became the devil's advocate in a way.
Yeah. So I learned that I've had church hurt. And then when I became a pastor, I caused church hurt.
Yeah.
Was there a moment where you had that as well?
Well, you know, for me, I think every generation is going to experience that for the next generation. And I'm a millennial. I'm exactly a millennial. I actually have a younger sister who's Gen Z, who's 10 years younger than me. And, you know, whenever there's those generational divides, I feel like it doesn't matter how old you are. You kind of look at the differences in a new generation and you kind of have this like, what are you thinking? Or what are you like, how could you be like that? Or why would you make that decision? Or what, you know, those kind of thoughts. And I have definitely had to catch myself with that, recognizing that if the faith will be passed on generation after generation as God intends it to be, then we actually have to learn to see the beauty and the strength that each new generation brings to the table as we give them the keys, as we trust them with authority, as we let them lead. But I've definitely found myself in that position of like, well, they're not doing it the way that I would do that, or they're not doing that. And then just a reminder of, like, what are the things that we're trying to coach out of young leaders? And what are the things we actually need to let them teach us and coach us in?
I think so often we get the two mixed up.
Yeah.
So, do you have any inclination? Obviously, you can look back at your own story. Did that ever happen to you where, like, leaders, good-hearted, very wonderful leaders, ended up trying to coach the innovation out of you rather than coach maybe the impatience or the character issues out of you?
Yeah, for sure. I think I experienced that. One of the things, so we planted in 2018. We were 2 years old as a church and then COVID hit, right?
COVID hit, yeah.
And one of the things I distinctly remember was, so it was myself, one of my best friends from college, Jake. He's our associate pastor. And then early on, my brother jumped on the team. The three of us were all like late 20s or 30, you know, like we were all in that kind of like people looking at us and we weren't, it wasn't like we were, the, you know, and sometimes you get that, but it's like a church full of college kids. And so you are kind of the older person in the room. That was not the case, right? We were definitely the young people in the room. And I distinctly remember when it came to technology and utilizing video, leveraging social media and just time spent on like good social media communication. I'm pretty strict with like brand guidelines for like, I want things to look a certain way, you know, all that sort of stuff. You're like that, all that sort of stuff. And I remember there being some resistance with that, or we need, you know, kind of digital versus analog, all that sort of stuff early. And then COVID hit and we were a team of three. We pivoted and adapted to still reaching people effectively online as good as a mega church with a staff of 30 or 40.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were digital, you know, we were as close to digital natives as you could be, right? Yeah. We knew podcasting, we knew YouTube, we knew social media, we knew all this stuff. We were doing online Q&As with the pastor. We were doing online prayer stuff. We were doing all this sort of stuff. And it was almost like all of those critiques vanished overnight in the midst of COVID. And you don't always see that justification so instantaneously.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things that I would say is like, let the fruit prove itself.
Yeah.
For a young leader, and you know, for older leaders to actually ask the question like, are they doing this just because they're difficult or they see things a different way? Or like, do they actually have a heart for reaching people? Like trying to understand the motives or the reasons why a young person might do things differently. Because a lot of the things that I look at now with Gen Z and Gen Alpha is if you actually peel back the layers, man, they're actually being really effective at reaching their peers.
Mm.
And so if you actually just take 5 minutes and start asking the questions, like, could you help me understand that? I think approaching it with curiosity is going to be the thing that helps you distinguish between, no, this is maybe a little bit of pride or a little bit of arrogance or a little bit of a character flaw as a discipleship opportunity for a young leader versus, you know, this is actually a gift and maybe I shouldn't try to get them to conform to like my norms or my standards.
Yeah, I am. There's a couple things that I'm thinking about as you started talking about that. The first one is Arthur Brooks. He wrote a book called From Strength to Strength, and he talks about the difference between fluid intelligence and crystallized intelligence. And fluid intelligence peaks in your mid-20s and begins to decline. I was going to say disintegrate, but decline, no, over time. And crystallized intelligence ends up taking its place. So, you know, as you find yourself in leadership, as you start knocking on the age of like 40 years old, you might not have the innovative ideas as you used to, but you're going to see patterns and system recognition. You're going to understand people more. Like there becomes a trade-off in the type of intelligence. You might not remember everybody's name anymore or where you left the keys, but he talks about those too. And you guys starting in your mid-20s, we're absolutely a part of that. I remember 2016, I'm 30 years old-ish, replanting a church in Omaha, Nebraska in my denominational group with a bunch of pastors. They're asking how to reach millennials. I'm the only millennial in the room. I was the youngest pastor by like 25 years. And they finally, after about 45 minutes of deliberating, asked me what I thought. One millennial they should have been asking a little bit earlier. And I was dumb enough to say, well, I keep thinking about what if the church didn't have a building? And they laughed me out of the room. Like, there's like cute little millennial. Let's go back and answer the real question. You know, and 4 years later, obviously, we're sitting there with no church building. And I felt a little validated. I won't lie. You know, and I also knew as soon as they could get back to the building, they would. And yet the stuff that worked in COVID is still working. So it's not a either or, it's a both and. And so I think even as we're looking at technology moving forward with AI, like there's just so much stuff that's coming that we don't even have a clue about how to handle some of that. I would consider myself on the cutting edge of AI and the church and where we're going digitally. But as you're talking, I started thinking a little bit more about, back when the printing press began to get mainstream after the Reformation, there was a writer that talked about how kids had all the information in the world at their fingertips and they don't need it anymore. And they have issues with character because they're so lazy because they have all this information. And to think about, I think I have more books on my bookshelves than they had in the entire world at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk a little bit about how older leaders should be thinking about raising up younger leaders and sending them out much faster than we would otherwise want to.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the biggest issue that church leaders needed to be talking about 10 years ago. I think we're about a decade too late. All the statistics about the average age of pastors has gotten older every single year, the amount of pastoral succession crisis, all that sort of stuff, right? And before we talk about how do you raise someone up and send them out, you have to actually just spend time with someone that's a part of that generation. Like you have to just actually take time to to say, I'm going to go like, and I'm not saying like go on a college campus and try to dress like they do and fit in or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
I'm saying like, if you have, like, even if before you see someone as a leader, like, are you getting coffee with people in that next generation? Are, for me, like, I'm intentional about, like, younger guys want to go on runs with me. And so I'm going to like go hit the trails with them. I'm going to go mountain biking with them. I'm going to do that kind of stuff. And so if you're not in the room, you can't ever have the conversation, right? And you're not even going to be able to see the gifts and the strengths in those leaders in order to be able to cultivate those things, to call them out, to speak words of calling and prophecy over them. So it all starts with rubbing shoulders. And I think far too many leaders are so busy with the tasks and the programs and the shepherding and all, you know, the to-do list that they have, that it seems like it's one more thing. And I'm just a huge proponent of, it's the one thing you cannot neglect. You have to be intentional about that. So that's where I would start. Now, as you do that, you're going to start noticing, wow, like God has really gifted young leaders. And they've got ideas that I'm not, they're seeing things that I'm missing. They know how to reach their friends with the gospel in ways that I don't. So you start giving them opportunities to lead that allows them to utilize those giftings. Now, that's going to look like a lot of different things. You know, starting small, giving them opportunities within like a church program to speak, to share, to do that sort of stuff. I think one of the biggest things similar to that idea of you just got to be in the room, get coffee, is a lot of younger leaders would love to just kind of join you as you do significant things. They'd love to just be in the room and be invited along when you go and do a hospital call. They would love to just sit in on an elder meeting sometime to just see what go. They're like, it's kind of like this mysterious thing. If you've never been in an elders meeting, if you've never been, you know, in those behind the scenes things.
Yeah.
Like they want to be there. They want to like, you know, to be in. So it starts with just spending time rubbing shoulders. Then I think it's inviting them in, trusting them with responsibilities. And then as you raise them up, give, you know, those who are faithful with a little will be given more. It's a principle of the kingdom. Just start trusting people with more and more. Give someone an opportunity to preach. Give someone an opportunity to lead worship, to lead a team, to start leading a team, like trust them to start leading other people. But I really do think when it becomes clear that God has anointed someone for like church planting, for example, I'm shocked sometimes the timelines that I hear from pastors that they think somebody needs in order to be like, I'm like, to me, like, I'm like, what do we want from these people? To, you know, when I look at like the experience that I had, you know, like, yeah, I had a number of
Josh,
years as a youth.
They want a sure thing. That's all they want. They want to know we send these people out, they're going to be the next mega church pastor and make our denomination or our sending church look really, really good.
Yeah. You know,
I that's the only thing I can think of.
Here's my, and that's a, and there's a financial incentive too. You know, you don't want to invest, you know, a bunch of money into a project. Here's my hot take on if you want a sure thing.
Oh, okay? Yes. Yeah, definitely. We do hot takes here all the time.
And I'm all for preparation. If you want a church plant to be successful, then you need to take some of that preparation work and energy, and you need to put it into ongoing support and care for the people who are in ministry, because that's where somebody gets chewed up, is in those first few years of ministry. And I'm seeing it firsthand in young church planters that I know, is a ton of energy and a ton of like assessment and
on the front end. Yes, totally.
It's like heavy.
And then you're totally on your own, right? At the end. Yes. When I was doing church replanting, that's exactly what happened. Like tons of assessments, tons of preparation, quote unquote preparation. And then you're on your own and you got nobody to call.
Well, and again, I don't want to, this isn't a venting session, okay? But what I'm, it's like, and then they're getting, you're getting a checkup, but the checkup is, how's your numbers? How's your budget?
Yes.
How effect? So it's more like the pressure's on you now to deliver, as opposed to like having an ongoing plan for support and care. Like the one of the this is earlier. Why was I journaling? Because that's a season that I saw a counselor, and I needed my first 6 months as a church planner is when I actually needed counseling the most out of any season of my life.
Totally.
And we're not thinking that way. We're like, all right, you're 30 years old, and you know you need 5 more years of an onboarding ramp, and then we'll trust you with this project. But then once you're doing it, it's like, well, what if we just actually set them up for success in an ongoing way? I think that's what the next generation really needs.
Well, you bring up a really significant thing that I've been thinking about a lot. I have this hypothesis that young people will no longer go through denominational systems. They're not going to ask for permission to start a church or start a ministry or do a thing. And because it's just too easy to turn on your cell phone and just start talking. And then out of that, maybe something goes viral and you get to start your own thing because now you got social authority. I just see there's too much a red tape and too much systematic gatekeeping in the old way of doing things that young people are like, why? What's the point? And I think this ongoing thing that you're talking about, like this as-you-go model of training, is the new way forward. You can no longer go, hey, before you go, we get to decide if you go. We get to decide if you're ready to go. I think there's a shift coming really, really quickly. And it's probably, you know, it says the future is already here. It's just not in, it's just not equally distributed. I think that's where we're at. I see younger people not waiting around. And I don't think churches that care about multiplication or denominations that are actually trying to figure this thing out will survive if they don't really understand this concept. I'd love to hear, obviously you wrote the book on, what are you waiting for? Like, this is the real crux of this this next era of ministry development. I'd love for you to riff on that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is a recognition that like, it might be faster. It might be getting people out the door faster, trusting them sooner, younger, whatever that might look like. But it's not necessarily a naive take that like, yep, and a 27-year-old has everything that they need right now, right?
Totally, yeah.
Because I didn't, right?
Yeah, well, my first pastor position, I was like in the shower crying and going, God, why'd you bring me here to kill this thing?
Exactly. So yeah. I think it's just, I know that next generation leaders are hungry for mentorship. They're hungry for people to pray with them, check in on their marriage. You think about like, just for any seasoned leader, what were you like in your late 20s, early 30s, right? You were figuring out, you know, if you're married, you're figuring out how to even be married. You're figuring out like what happens when that kid comes along, what happens, you know, the first funeral that you do. If you don't have like, if someone's in those positions, which you're going to be in if you're a church planter, you actually desperately want someone with experience that you can call, that you can talk to, that can actually give you that wisdom. It's a little backwards to think that we can fully train that for all the complexities of life and ministry before somebody gets to those points. What's more needed for those leaders is as they encounter those situations, they have the people to talk to. They have the people to support them, to care for them. And so I think it has a little bit more to do with, ongoing care and support as opposed to, because how it comes across probably to leaders. I never went through an assessment. We had no planting organization. We had none of that, but I also didn't have to go through any of the hoops. And I think that's one of the biggest barriers that the next generation will feel. Why am I having to check all these boxes? Like, these are your boxes that you want me to check. Why do you know, things that aren't necessarily important to them. And so I really do agree. I think we have to be rethinking through our structure of sending, but also sending in a way that's sustainable. I think sustainability is going to be huge moving forward.
Yeah, you bring something up there that I was thinking about. You guys planted on the ground with the team. You did not have any outside support. And I have seen anecdotally that those are the churches that last the longest. Like, they're not the ones that get support off the bat or off the front end. They're the ones that get support once they hit 100 people, 150 people, you know. I think there's just a different mentality moving into it. And it's almost got a proof of concept thing as well. Like, I'm seeing more and more of those type of leaders actually having the longer term success. If you look at guys like Rick Warren back in the 80s, nobody knew about church plant funding. ARC wasn't available. Like, nobody was like sending hundreds of thousands of dollars to start a church. Nobody was doing it. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's the future. Tim Keller, that white paper on the renewal of the American church, 82 page PDF. Mm-hmm. Anyone can download it for free on the internet. He released it, I think, a year or two before he passed away. One of it's like classic Tim Keller. It's like,
yeah,
very heavy. Do I understand what he's saying? I think so, you know. But if you can wade through it, near the end, he talks about what, like, some conclusion. So what does this mean? One of the things he talks about that's huge on my heart is we need to stem the bleeding of our children from the church, of the next generation out of the church. Mm-hmm. And actually, he says we not only need to stem the bleeding, we need to reverse it. We need to be reaching more effectively next generation, all about that. But one of the other conclusions he comes to is we need to plant churches faster and cheaper. And I think those things actually, you know, they go together, right? But it's a different skill set of teaching someone to go out and get funding from alternative income sources. Mm-hmm. So essentially, like, teaching somebody, which is a huge, this is like, in church planting, like, I'm helping host a church planting assessment next week. We're hosting one, and I'm serving on it. Is like, that's one of the things you measure. How effective is somebody at, like, quote unquote fundraising?
Fundraising, yeah.
Right. Well, the reality is, you can actually be good at fundraising from exterior sources, but bad at creating a culture of generosity from the people who you're on mission with, and that's a more effective, more sustainable church. So we were, because we didn't have that. We had no one that we could go out and ask for. We said, we don't get paid if we don't make it, right? Like, we don't have jobs. The church closes. We have very razor thin margins in our budget. And so we have to teach our people as a spiritual practice generosity.
Yeah.
Because it's an important part of the gospel. And so we did that from day one, and God's been faithful ever since. And now, you know, we're sending out a church plant this fall, and we're able to send them out with resources and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
We are taking the lessons that we learned about creating that culture and saying, hey, even though, like, we can help provide resources for you guys, this is still a vital aspect of church planting, is you have to learn how to create a culture.
So let me ask you a question. Should we be sending 23 and 24-year-olds to go plant churches?
Depending on the 23, 24-year-old. I wouldn't say no. I definitely wouldn't count someone out because of their age.
Mm-hmm.
I also would hesitate to you've got to balance the competencies and the character, which you talked about earlier.
You're right.
You got to be really careful with a highly competent, highly gifted 23-year-old who has been trusted with big things, but has not had the character formation. I would not send that person out. I would say, let me mentor you, or let's get someone to disciple you for a couple years, because 25 is still pretty young and they could be really effective as a 25-year-old, right?
Yeah.
At the same time, you've got to also balance, do you have the competencies? Because you could have a really, somebody who's really deep in their relationship, their walk with God, and they've only preached one time or whatever. It's like, right. Well, you got to give them a shot. You got to actually train them in the right ways. I could probably only see myself sending out someone in their young 20s if I had raised them up from the time they were in their late teenage years, if they were in house.
So just, I would be them.
Yep. If somebody came to me as a hotshot 23-year-old, I'd still probably say, I'd love to spend time with you for a couple years and send you out later. If it was someone that either me, myself, or one of our other pastors had discipled, raised them up, I would say, and they're 23, it's just like, maybe that would be the case situation that I would say, I think we're going to take what the world would say is a huge risk, but we're going to do it, right?
Yeah.
So that would be my nuance to answer that question. It's not an automatic no, but I also would be cautious of somebody who is like, it's an automatic yes, because we got to think younger or whatever.
Right. So you said the competency and the character, what are the milestones you're looking for? So let's say quit calling age an issue. Let's get that vocabulary out of the church. Age is not the problem. It's competency and character.
Exactly. Because so, age is not either one of those.
Yeah. Because you could be 75 years old and still lack both.
Yep.
So what are you looking for? What to you would go, hey, these are the signs that this person is ready.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good. Character. Fruit of the Spirit, Christ-like. It's kind of like, hopefully people know what are signs of good character. Humility, I would mark that as a pretty hallmark one to look for, because for a young leader, I think there's an extra danger on insecurity, and that often manifests as lack of humility. I would pay attention to that with a younger leader. Because here's the thing, they're trying to act like they know what they're doing.
Yeah, they're trying to say, hey, I'll prove myself. I was actually talking to another leader about a very well-known pastor who he was best friends with for a long time before he got big. And he actually said this guy came off as super humble in the beginning. Mm. But the more he got the spotlight, the less humble he was. And he said, actually, that humility was insecurity that he was transparent about, and everybody mistook it as humility.
Yeah.
And so they would look at this young man and go, oh man, he's so humble. He's got so much character. And to me, I probably had not enough humility, but I'm also like an 8 on the Enneagram, So even if I was being humble, and I would consider myself very teachable, actually. And I would say my mentors actually would agree with me. But younger me would get overlooked because my ability to go, I'll just figure it out, was considered a knock on humility when it actually wasn't. And so while I hear you, I would love for you to riff a little bit on that, going, hey, how do we really get to see humility in action to know they're actually humble, or no, there's something deeper there we need to deal with?
Yeah, for sure. So I think, one of the, mistakes about humility is thinking that it's like low self-esteem, right? Mm-hmm. Philippians 2 is a great biblical text. It's considering the needs of others, thinking of others first. Mm-hmm. C.S. Lewis has that great line, it's not thinking less of yourself, thinking of yourself less.
Yourself,
right?
Less. Yeah.
Right? All these sorts of things. I would say one of my best definitions of humility is having an accurate perception of yourself.
Mm.
And so what I would be looking for is that young leader's identity secure in Christ. Mm-hmm. And so you're looking at identity on the one side and idolatry on the other side when it comes to ministry.
Yeah.
So identity, are you getting too much of yourself from your performance, from how well that you, so this leader you're talking about,
yeah,
this the sermon goes really well and yeah, people are going to say something about that. Are you getting, does that mean too much to you? Is it shaping your perception, or are you primarily who God says you are with or without a good performance, right?
Well, and the reality is every time my first 2 years of preaching, I had a group that I would go to and I go, how'd I do? And I was really trying to learn, right?
Yeah.
But I caught myself about 4 years later, still asking people, what did you think? Knowing I did a good job.
Yeah, when you already know.
Right? Or I did about as good of a job as I possibly could, you know?
Yeah.
And so I, you know, we talk about the identity versus idolatry thing. I am getting ready to turn 39 and I'm still dealing with it all these years later. And I feel like there's always these layers that God's pulling off and going, oh, that thing right there. You're like, oh man, I don't know if you ever finish getting done with that work.
No. And that's why I think, so then idolatry. So I say identity is, are you getting too much? And then idolatry is, are you giving too much? Like, what are you sacrificing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is your family suffer? Like, I don't want to send out a 23-year-old if it's going to like hurt their marriage for them to be a church planner, right? I want them to learn what are you giving to? What are you, you know, all that sort of stuff.
You're actually reading my mail. Everything you're talking about, I made mistakes on. I remember being in Omaha. My wife's like, hey, when you're home, you're not home. And you're never home. She's like, I need you home more. And I looked at her, Josh, I'm not kidding, right? So everybody on the podcast, yes, just write me emails later. I said, babe, I love you. But if it came between you and the kids and the mission, I'd pick the mission every time.
Oh, man.
Stupidest thing I could have ever said. And yet, I was in the military, like they own me. Like, so I was mission.
Right.
Growing up, every ounce of me, my dad was a church planter. That is just what we did. That's what I knew. But I knew the moment I said it, I was, I looked at my wife's face and it was like, I just shot her in the gut, which was horrible because she's the best person in the world. And then secondly, like, wait a minute. I remember hearing the Holy Spirit say, and that's what ruined your family's lives. So I'm like, oh, but it was what I knew, you know? So I hear you and go, I did all the wrong things.
Yeah. Well, at a certain level, you have to ask the question, like, how good is good enough in all these areas before someone's ready?
Oh yeah.
And I think this goes back to what we were talking about earlier in that, you need to have how good is good enough to send them out, knowing that there is ongoing support. There is room for failure. There is room for continued growth because how was the Apostle Peter's maturity level before the day of Pentecost, right? He was still up until that moment, he was still like getting things wrong. And
he's still Peter. Know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's still Peter. And so it's like, is there character, is there these major pitfalls that are predictable that I can help set them up for? Like if they spent even one more year in a residency or one more year working with us on staff, or if they, like that I could save a lot of pain because, hey, I'm just that season ahead and I know what that's like and I've made some of those mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
I've read Emotionally Healthy Spirituality and
yeah.
I know. Pete Scazzaro's wife was like, I'm not divorcing you, but I quit your church.
But I'm done with your church. That's worse than divorcing me. I could have at least blamed it on you. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if there's those tendencies in their character that a little bit more training shepherding could really help, then I want to make sure they're at least at that level. So those are the milestones of character I would look for.
Yeah.
With competencies, I think every model of church is going to be different. The demands of every model, every leader has different strengths. I'm a big believer in leaning into your strengths and shoring up your weaknesses with good teams. I'm all about team-based ministry, team-based leadership. If I'm and I'll just be honest about, I'll just use myself as an example.
Yeah.
I'm a strong communicator. I'm a strong leader. I'm not the strongest at pastoring people. And if somebody's listening to this from my church, this is no surprise. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So the reality is when we planted and it was me and my buddy, Jake is an amazing shepherd of people and cares for people. Now that doesn't mean that I never do pastoral visits, that I never go to the hospital, that I never, sit with a grieving family. I do all of that sort of stuff. But I think the future is of church planting, and probably this isn't even maybe a new take, but is you're going to be seeing teams with complementary strengths.
Yeah.
Not the superstar pastor who checks every box, because the job description has grown, right?
Yeah.
All the things you have to be good at, and nobody's going to fit that. So it's unrealistic. And so what we have to do is, another thing I would be looking for in competencies is, okay, do they have some of the basic competencies that they need to be able to get up and, teach or cast vision, somewhat effectively? Are they able to follow up? I would look at those things, but I would also be looking at, and who are we sending you with? And so that question of would you send a 23-year-old? It's I probably would. I don't know if I would send any 23-year-old by themselves, but I don't know if I'd send any 40-year-old by themselves.
Yeah, I don't know. Jesus never sent any of them alone, right? You look at all of his stuff, it was always two or three.
Yeah. And Paul and Barnabas, I think, is such a great model for this.
Yeah.
With how, and I kind of felt like me and my buddy Jake had a Paul and Barnabas thing going in the early days of our church, right? Where I'm a little bit more, harsh might be the wrong word, but direct and let's make the decision, let's do it. And there's that Barnabas of encouragement and believing the best in somebody, and rallying, that person is a relational magnet and just drawing people together and creating community. And so I would look for, okay, what competencies does this person have? How can we even refine those?
Mm-hmm.
And then are they able to work collaboratively? I look at collaboration as a key ingredient for any leader. And so I'd be looking at a high collaborative leader who, do they work well in team projects, like a school project?
Yeah.
Can they handle that? Because I think, I think there's this incredible, we send our church plants with teams, right?
Yeah.
With collaborative giftings.
I love that. Yeah. I was thinking about, just looking at my gifting and some of the other guys that I've had on our teams. What I've learned about me is my gift is better the bigger and more strategic things get. I'm probably same as you, where I'm not the best shepherd in the world. But I've got some guys that have been on my teams in the past. They're really, really good. They can get to 125. Because they're so relational and they're good at it. But what do you do with them after you get to 125? They have no clue. They just want to be with those people. And I want to go, okay, how can we get another 125? Let's find the five guys over there. Let's start moving them over here and let's create another cell, And I do that well. And I've just noticed there are, in every team, there are these moments where this person takes the lead and this person takes the lead. And this person takes the lead. And while you might be the functional, strategic administrative leader of the organization, the CEO, if you will, the reality is there are moments and seasons where other people get the limelight. Michael Jordan was not by himself. Every once in a while, Luke Longley had a great career game, So that's probably dating myself. I should say LeBron and all of his 5,500 teammates that he's had. So. Man, I really appreciate the conversation. I think it's needed in the church. I think especially for where we're headed, we're leaders are going to have to think about this. One, I think who they've relied on for leadership in the past is not going to be around and not going to be the best types of people to lead in the next season, which requires you to look at people like Gen Z, who you wouldn't normally have looked at as leaders this early. Is there a question that you're like, man, I really would love to answer this, but you didn't ask it?
That's a good question. I think, man, I think the question that I'm really interested in is not just how can we send younger leaders to plant churches or pursue God's calling on their lives or whatever, but how can we ensure that they're going to still be living that out 10 years from now? And this kind of sustainable ministry, because the reality is we have an incredible opportunity. There is a spiritual openness in the next generation. I think if we're not empowering Gen Z to reach Gen Z right now, I mean, what are we doing? Like, this is the moment. This is the time. But the question of how are we setting them up to still be married, to still have, to not be burned out, to still like have a strong faith, like all these sorts of, these are the things that like our generation, the millennial generation, led the way in deconstruction. I'll just say it. Like,
yeah.
This is our peers. This is the people that we grew up with, because there was an incredible enthusiasm, and then there was a huge crash and burn with the pain and church hurt and, you know, unsustainable rhythms and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, how can we think? We've got to be thinking about the future, but I want to think even that next level of the future of how are we doing it in a way that's sustainable and that sets young leaders up to get in the game and then to be healthy and to be there for the long haul.
Well, I think it's been overlooked for so long. I think I heard as Steve Cuss on Carrie Newhoff's podcast a while back, he talked about his wife being in counseling and him being a pastor of a church. And he's like, hey, I'm going to preach from the service every week, get you new clients. And she's like, oh, no, you won't. Because that would be a conflict of interest. And she started talking about, he's like, what are you talking about? She started talking about, you know, the ethics of counseling and psychology. And he's like, oh my gosh, we're a walking conflict of interest as pastors in the church. You know, we wear multiple hats every time we sit down with someone. And I've heard so many people over the years talk about how you should have friends inside your congregation. And while I think that's pie in the sky and wonderful and admirable, the reality is they're never just your friends. You know, and they're also somebody who most likely is looking to you for spiritual guidance. They're also looking to you for counseling. They're also looking to you for, you know, for some sort of spiritual authority in their lives. And it just becomes unbearable from a relational standpoint. And one of the things that I've thought about multiple times over the last year or two specifically is that leaders need to have friends outside of the place they're serving. Like real friendships that don't care about their title, they don't care about the organization. While they want you to succeed and they'll celebrate when you succeed, they're not going to leave if things go bad. And I think that lack of friendship, one, knowing how to build a friendship like that, giving time and space for friendship, is what causes a lot of the problems. Most leaders are so isolated, and isolation is where sin festers. Not because you're sinful, although we are. The reality is when you get in isolation, you don't have opportunity to unload the hurt and the wounds and the baggage and the pressure. And I think friendship is a missing factor for the sustainable long-term ministry that you're talking about. What's your thoughts about that? And you could push back on me, because I know there's a lot of pastors that would be like, no, you gotta lead it. So I'd love to hear what you think.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest factors. The way I would state it, because I'm in a unique situation where I have one of my best friends and my brother are both on the pastoral team with me.
Yeah.
And I would look at both of those guys and say they're my two best friends in the world. And so, but there's nuance to that. And the reality of, I do like their performance reviews at the end of the year,
Yeah.
and there's certain times where you have to kind of compartmentalize, like, all right, I am your boss right now,
Yeah.
but the reality is, I would just say the way that I would answer that question is every leader needs real friends. And we all know what having a real friend was like when we were kids, when we were
Yeah.
in high school, when you did stupid stuff together, when you could share anything with, where
Yeah.
you could tell jokes, and even if they were inappropriate, everyone would bust out. Like you, that's a real friend. You don't have to have a filter or a censor or whatever. And I would even say, like, if you just like ask other pastors, who are your friends? It's shocking the amount of like, I lead a life group, and it's like, okay. Like people that you're not that it's not this like I'm clear, like a power dynamic, I'm clearly pouring into them and helping their marriage and doing all this sort of stuff, but just like who are those like actual iron sharpening iron mutual people you enjoy being around, people who fill you up, you fill them up, those are the sustainable relationships that will help you stay in it for the long haul, and the people that you can vent about when things are difficult. Like anybody else, like I lead through difficult situations all the time. And
Yeah.
if you don't have people that you can be real with about that, then you're not going to make it. And that's why I think in the long haul, like you're gonna be like one of the, it's still like about a third of pastors are still considering working at Starbucks instead of being a pastor. Not specifically Starbucks, but they're
Yeah.
It's still,
Right. Something else. Yeah.
it crosses people's mind on a regular basis because you've got all this stuff and you can give it to God in prayer, and that's important as well. But we've got to have this talking to each other type thing. Whether that's really good buddy. And so here's the thing. Some people say I have that with someone from years ago that now lives in a different city, but there's no ongoing time where you're
Right.
talking to them.
Yeah.
So I would say, so you don't have it anymore.
So you don't have it. You had that.
You had that,
Yes.
right? Or or there's the some of the weird like power dynamic. Like I have it. We have a really good elder. It's like, okay, maybe, but like, could you share that you're mad at the rest of the elders with that elder? Like if that uninhibited, like I can actually just talk to them about anything, I can be myself around them and that sort of thing. And I think you also have to be mindful about like, does your spouse have that too?
Yeah, that's a big deal. That is a huge deal, because that's the number one thing that we've found. My wife being in ministry, and we've been to multiple churches, that's the one thing. She's not had that many friends. Yeah, that's a big deal.
It's a simple, hey, you guys have friends. Like it's a really simple question.
Yeah, the way I go is, who would you take on vacation with you and be excited about it?
Yeah, that's
Because
a
the
great.
reality is, you're trying to get away from the most of the people to rest and recharge. But if you want to take some people with you, those are probably your real friends.
Definitely. Definitely. And far too many people have, they used to have that, but they don't have it anymore. And I just,
Yeah.
there's probably a lot of listeners right now who that it's just like, probably it this grieves them actually to hear this. It's just like, I wish I had close friends.
Yeah.
And I would just encourage people to like, to ask God to provide really close friends and then to initiate and to actually like, I mean, it's Ben Rector has that line, you can't make old friends.
Yeah.
And I love that. It's true. You can't make old friends, but you can make new, really good friends.
Yeah.
And you have to. Especially if you moved somewhere, if you're in a different context than where you went to college or where you got married or where you grew up, you have to be willing to do the work of finding those people. And it might be somebody who doesn't even go to your church or somebody who's, you know, just in your neighborhood. Like, I don't know, but you have to find those people.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. Well, Josh, where could they find you if they want to get to know more about what you're doing, get your book?
Yeah, I have just a blog, a simple website, joshuabranham.com. And my book is called What Are You Waiting For? A Young Leader's Guide to Changing the World. It's on my website. It's also on Amazon. If people want to check it out on there, I would say a great resource to give to a young leader, an emerging leader. But I would say one step better is a great resource to go through with a young leader. If you're like, I'm having coffee with this person, we're just catching up, but I want to add some intentionality. I want to help them discern God's calling on their life. There's discussion questions in there, and it'll take them on a journey.
Well, that's great, man. I appreciate the time. This was wonderful. And yeah, excited to see how the church is going, and definitely had fun.
Yeah. Thanks, Jesse. Thanks for having me on.